So on the way out of the house of Lavan, Rachel, of course, steals the trophim, the idols, the statues of Lavan, and Rashi explains that she did this in an attempt to prevent him from worshipping Avodah Zarah in the future, so she meant, you know, she had good intentions. However, the Zohar HaKadosh tells us that since she caused distress to Lavan by stealing his trophim, by stealing his idols, so much so that he pursued them in order to retrieve them, as a result of that, she was punished, and that she died prematurely, and she wasn't Zohar to raise her own son, Binyamin. Rashi, of course, gives a different explanation on Chumash as to why she died prematurely, that it was because of the curse or the statement of Yaakov Avinu, "Asher timsa es alehecha lo yichya." He said to Lavan, "Why are you accusing us of stealing your idols? Whoever stole your idols should not live." And he, of course, unbeknownst to him, Rachel had the idols hidden in the sack of her camel, and he didn't know that. And even a tzaddik of a klal of a tzaddik that's misdirected, of course, can cause great harm. That's how Rashi explains the Chumash. However, according to the Zohar, she was punished for causing distress to her father, for being Mitzahar, her father, which seems to imply that even though her father was an idol worshiper and not keeping the Torah and the mitzvahs, nonetheless, she was required to honor him and respect him, or at least treat him in the way that one would treat one's father in the context of the mitzvah of Kibbut Aviyim. And that is similar, similar to the implications of Rashi at the end of Parshas Noach. Where Rashi comments in the pasuk Vayomas Terech B'Charan, the concluding pasuk Psukim in Parshas Noach, that tells us about the death of Charan. And Rashi comments the name of the Medrash, even though Charan didn't die at that time, he really died subsequent after Avram Avinu made his journey to Eretz Yisrael. Some 60 years later, the Torah records his death prior to Avram Avinu going on his pilgrimage to Eretz Yisrael in order not to highlight the fact that Avram Avinu seems to have abandoned his father in his most vulnerable years when he would have needed care. And Avraham Avinu seems to have neglected the mitzvah of Kibbut Aviyim. So in order not to highlight that, he did so, of course, based on the instructions of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore what he did was correct, but in order not to highlight the fact that Avraham Avinu seems to have forfeited or neglected the mitzvah of Kibbut Aviyim, the Torah stated the death of Korach prior to the departure of Avraham Avinu, and it's not a lie, it wasn't a misrepresentation of the truth, because the Gemara says in Brachos, Rishoyim b'chayehem kriya meisim, that Rishoyim, even while they're alive, are considered to be dead in a certain respect, and therefore Terach ki'ilu was dead because he was a Rasha. If he was a Rasha, how could there have been a mitzvah of Kibbut Aviyim in the first place, that the Torah was trying to avoid highlighting the fact that Avraham Avinu neglected Kibbut Aviyim? There should have been a mitzvah of Kibbut Aviyim in the first place if there's no Kibbut Aviyim by a father who's a Rasha. Rather, it sounds like from here that even though Terach was a Rasha, he was an idol worshiper, nonetheless, there was a mitzvah of Kibbut Aviyim, and in order not to give the misimpression that one is not obligated in Kibbut Aviyim, that Avraham Avinu was neglecting Kibbut Aviyim, the Torah recorded the death of Terach prior to the departure of Avraham Avinu. There's a similar implication from the Gemara Masechtas Yevamos, which tells us over here in Chavez Amud Aleph that if a man dies leaving his wife without any children, of course she falls to Yibum to his brother. However, if there are any children at all, then there is no Yibum. And the Mishnah says, Mishi Yeshel ben mikol makom. Any kind of son, Poiter, Eshes Avim min Yibum, and the child Potters exempts his mother from performing Yibum, v'chayva makasav yakalasoi. And he's not any kind of ben at all, is obligated not, or is prohibited from hitting, striking, or cursing his father. What do you mean, ben mikomakom? Any kind of ben, like the bottom of the barrel child. You know, what are we talking about here? What's being referred to? Gemara says, mikomakom lasuye mai, I'm reviewed the lasuye mamzer. To include a mamzer, even though you might have thought, since it's not a child, you know, in the traditional sense, you know, right, through the marital relationship, but an extramarital affair, you might have thought that the child who's a mamzer would not exempt his mother from Yibum, and perhaps the application of Kibbut Aviyim would not apply. He would be allowed to strike and to hit his father. And the Gemara comes to teach us that that is not the case, that he does exempt his mother from Yibum, and he is prohibited from hitting and cursing his father, even though his parents are clearly sinners, because the existence of a mamzer only comes about, it can come about throughout the performance of an avera, you know, if it's generational. His father was a mamzer, that gets passed on to the next generation. But, you know, the ben who's a mamzer directly, first generation mamzer, is because his parents engaged in Gilei Arayos. Even though his parents are involved in Gilei Arayos, there seems to be some obligation of Kibbut Aviyim to the degree that he's not allowed to hit, to strike, or to curse his parent. So this seems to indicate that there are obligations of Kibbut Aviyim, even to a parent who is a Rasha, an idol worshiper perhaps, who is not keeping the Torah in the mitzvahs. However, the Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia seems to state almost explicitly otherwise, because the Gemara there is discussing if a father leaves behind ribbis or gneva, you know, gzela, in his property, in his estate, and then he passes away. So he has ribis, interest that he charged me. So he stole property from others. The son is obligated to return it, mipnei kavod avihem, in order to honor his father. So Gemara asks, what kind of kavod avihem exists when a father charged ribis or father took gneva and gzela? The father is not oisa maisa amcha. The Gemara quotes in the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, v'nasiba amcha loisar, that a prince in your nation you should not curse. That's only, says Gemara, ba'oisa maisa amcha. If he acts in the way that the Jewish people are expected to conduct themselves, according to the Torah and the mitzvahs. If he is not oisa maisa amcha, he doesn't conduct himself appropriately, according to the Torah and the mitzvahs, you're not obligated or you're permitted to curse him. And the Gemara assumes that the same applies to a parent. You're only obligated in kibud avim if he's oisa maisa amcha. For that oisa maisa amcha, you're not obligated in kibud avim. So the Gemara asks, why then does the son have to return the gzela of his father or the ribbis of his father if he charged a be'iser? He's not oisa maisa amcha. So the Gemara says, perhaps we have to be afraid, maybe the father performed tshuva before he died. And if he performed tshuva, then kibud avim would be restored. But it sounds like while he's eino oisa maisa amcha, certainly if he hasn't done tshuva, he's unrepentant, there should be no obligation of kibud avim. And this is supported by another Gemara, Masechta Sanhedrin, Memzayin Med Aleph, that discusses the father of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who was Achaz and was a Rosha, that Chizkiyahu HaMelech did not provide him with a proper burial, rather, girer atzmais aviv amita shechavalim. He carried him around on a bed of strings in order to give a musar shmuz to the nation that they knew Achaz the king was a Rasha, and to show that he wasn't being honored after his death, in order to give them musar and inspire them to lead lives based on the Torah and the mitzvahs. And Rashi there asks, and what about kavod av? You have to honor your parent, and that perhaps includes providing them with a proper burial. No, that didn't extend to Achaz, because he was eino oisa maisa amcha. He didn't conduct himself according to the Torah and the mitzvahs properly, and therefore the obligation of kibud avim did not extend to Achaz. Didn't include Achaz, because it was eino oisa maisa amcha. So from here, it seems conclusive that the obligation of kibud avim does not apply to a father, a parent, who does not keep the Torah and the mitzvahs of Avrasha. However, that seems to contradict the Zohar, which tells us, right, that Rachel was punished for pain, for causing distress and pain to Lavan by stealing his trophim, his Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, in Yavam, it said, a mamzer, even though his parents are over and give their rice, he's still obligated in kibud avim to the degree that he's not allowed to hit them, or to strike them, to curse them. And, Avram Avinu, in order not to highlight the fact that he was neglecting kibud avim to his father Terach, the Torah recorded the death of Terach prior to the departure of Avram Avinu, which seems to indicate that there is an obligation of kibud avim, even if a person's father is an idol worshiper, not keeping to the Torah and the mitzvah. So because we have contradictory sources indicating, different indications as to whether or not kibud avim includes a father who's a rasha, a parent who's not keeping the Torah and the mitzvah, it's not surprising we actually have a machlekes rishonim about this. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Reish Mem, Sif Yud Ches, quotes the Rambam verbatim, where the Rambam paskins that a father who's a Rasha, one is obligated to honor a father even if he's a Rasha. Mamzer chayv bekoved aviv moiro, over here aizvav, afil hay aviv Rasha, balaveiros, even if the father's a Rasha, the balaveiros, and he has not, the Shulchan Aruch makes no mention of the fact that we have to, that perhaps he did tshuva. It sounds like tshuva was not on the table, didn't do tshuva. Nonetheless, there's still an obligation, mechabdo misyarim mimenu, an obligation to honor the parent. The Ramah quotes from the Tur, you're not obligated to honor a parent who's a Rasha, unless he performed tshuva. But if they didn't perform tshuva, that's the Gemara B'Mitzvah, that's the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, there's no obligation of kibud avim. So it's a machlekes to Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, machlekes to Rambam and the Torah, and it's a machlekes achrayim had a paskin. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the Bach, think, well, this is a machlekes harishayim over here about a mitzvah midday raisa, does kibud avim include a father, a parent who's a Rasha, not keeping to the Torah and the mitzvahs? And they think we should be machmir. And even though the Ramah quotes the Tur, who is lenient, and typically we follow the Piskei Ramah, the Ramah here doesn't endorse the Tur, it just quotes it. And perhaps, therefore, we shouldn't follow the opinion of the Tur, we should follow the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. The Aruch HaShulchan disagrees, and he says, we typically follow the Piskei Ramah, and here should be no different. And Rav HaAchreinim assume that there's no obligation of kibud avim with a parent who is not keeping to the Torah and the mitzvahs with a parent who is a Rasha. However, we do have conflicting sources. So what is each position? The Tur feels there's no obligation to keep it avim by a parent who's a Rasha. The Rambam feels that there is. What does each one do with the sources that indicate otherwise? So what does the Tur do with the, with the Zohar HaKadosh that tells us Rachel was punished for stealing the Trophim of Lavan because it caused him distress? He was an idol worshiper, and she had good intentions in order to prevent him from worshiping Avodah Zarah. Nonetheless, she was punished. Or what about the Gemara in Yevamah that a mamzer is obligated to honor his parents, even though they engaged in Gilui Arayos? So the Chida explains in a Sefer Pesach Inayim, Seftas Bava Kama, that there's a difference between honoring a parent versus causing a parent distress, cursing a parent and striking a parent. That even though the Torah feels that there perhaps is no obligation of kibud aviyem with a parent for a parent who's a rasha, who's not keeping the Torah and the mitzvahs, that does not mean that you can strike them, hit them, or cause them distress. That would still be prohibited, even for a parent who is a rasha. And the Shulchan Aruch states this explicitly, Siman Reish Mem Aleph Sif Hey, quoting from the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, that if a father, let's say, violates an aveira for which he's chayav malchus, and it happens to be that the son is the bailiff in court who administers the, or I don't know if it's a bailiff or whatever the term is for one who would administer corporal punishment. We don't do that in America, so I don't know what the official term would be, executioner or whatever. The person whoever delivers corporal punishment in court, that's his son. And coincidentally, he's, you know, charged with giving malchus to his father. He's not permitted to do so. However, aviv o imoy aver shalaykum aleha, if one's parent violates an aver for which shachad malchus, v'haya ben shliach l'dayonim, the ben is the one who's appointed as the emissary of the dayonim to give malchus, lo yako isam, he's not permitted to strike them, even though they're a rasha. And perhaps you see from here that even though one's parent is a rasha, perhaps obligations of kibud aviyem do not extend, do not include such a parent, who's not keeping to the Torah and the mitzvahs, you would still not be permitted to cause them pain and distress, to strike them, or to curse them, and perhaps that's, you know, could resolve the Gemara Masechta Yevamos, which was talking about striking and cursing a parent. The mom's not allowed to strike and curse his parent. Rachel caused distress to Lavan, to pain to Lavan, even though she had the best of intentions, and he was an idol worshiper. All those things are not permitted, even according to the Torah. What did the Rambam do, though? The bigger problem is, what will the Rambam do with the Gemara Bava Metzia? The Gemara Sanhedrin Mishim, the Rambam believes that there is an obligation of kibud aviyem, even by a father who's a rasha. Yeah, but the Gemara says in Bava Metzia that it's limited to a father who's Aisa Maisa Amcha. That's why the father, the child who inherits Gzela, inherits ribbits from his parent, you know, is obligated to return them only because we, perhaps the father did tshuva. But if we know the father didn't do tshuva, there's no obligation to return them. No obligation, it sounds like, of kibud aviyem. Or, you know, Chizki Omelch dragged Achaz through the town, and kibud aviyem wasn't concerned with kibud aviyem because it seems to not include a parent who is not keeping to the Torah and the mitzvahs, who's a rasha. How would the Rambam deal with this? So the Maharam Shik has tshuvas, as the Talmud from the Chasam Sofer, of course. The Maharam Shik has tshuvas, but he also has comments on the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam. So the Maharam Shik's comments on the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam, he distinguishes here between in the lifetime of the father versus la'achar moisa. Yes, it's true. The Rambam believes that there is an obligation of kibud aviyem even to a father who's a rasha who doesn't keep the Torah and the mitzvahs. That's only during his lifetime. After he passes away, then there's no obligation of kibud aviyem unless the parent was oisa maisa amcha, unless he was keeping to the Torah and the mitzvahs. If he wasn't keeping the Torah and the mitzvahs, there is no obligation of kibud aviyem la'achar moisa. And the Gemara Masechta Bava Metzia, the Gemara Sanhedrin, which state that there is no obligation of kibud aviyem for a father who's a rasha, are all talking about la'acha moisai, after he passes away. That's where the Rambam feels there's no obligation of kibud aviyem by a father who's a rasha, but b'chayav, while he's alive, indeed there is. Why should one distinguish between mechayav and la'acha moisai? How do we justify this explanation? So Shechtu explains in the Sefer Eretz HaTzvi that perhaps it's based on a chakira that the Minchas Chinuch raises in his comments on the mitzvah of kibud aviyem. And that is, he wants to know, or investigates, whether the mitzvah of kibud aviyem is a mitzvah that is ben adam l'chaveroi, or is it a mitzvah that is ben adam l'mokam? Is the mitzvah of kibud aviyem predicated upon the fact that parents do so much for their children, almost indescribable amount for their child, and a person, you know, really has a greater perspective on this when they get to the other hill of, they transition from being a child to being a parent. You realize how much you do for every child. Child, for sure, doesn't even have a memory of all the different things that you do. And there's a, you know, kind of a requirement there for the child to acknowledge that and to at least recognize it by honoring and respecting the parent. Of course, as, you know, the sometimes, you know, it gets to the other end of the spectrum when the parent is aging and the child, therefore, has an obligation now to take care of the parent. He's really reciprocating that which, almost precisely in the same activities that the parent did for the child now is obligated to do for the parent. But even before you get to that stage, there's an obligation to recognize that this person did so much for me, and you know, there's a kind of basic gratitude that's required, a kind of hakaras hatov. So is, you know, kibud aviyem primarily bein adam l'chaveiro, and we're paying recognizing a debt of gratitude that one has. Or perhaps kibud aviyem is not bein adam l'chaveiro, but bein adam l'mokam, because the Gemara Masechtas Kiddushin of Hiralaman Beis compares the obligation of kibud aviyem to honoring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The pasuk says, "Kabedas avicha v'asimecha," and the pasuk says in Sefer Mishlei, "Kabedas Hashem mehoincha." to honor Hashem through your possessions. But it's kabed, kabed. And with regards to ishi moiv aviv tirah, the pasuk of Parshas Kedoshim, the Torah compares that to the pasuk of es Hashem Elokecha tirah, using the word fear in connection with parents, in connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, in order to connect the fear and the honor that one has for a parent to the fear and the honor that we have for our Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the Gemara concludes this with the well-known statement that Shlosh Shutvin Yesh B'Adam, there are three partners in the creation of a man, a father, a mother, and the Ribono Shel Olam. And therefore, by honoring the parent, one is really honoring, by proxy, by extension, the Ribono Shel Olam. You're honoring the partnership. So by honoring a parent, by extension, one is really honoring those who created him as an individual, and by extension, the Ribono Shel Olam as well, in a certain sense, the parents or the partners of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So perhaps the mitzvah ben Adam, of Kibud Aviyim is not so much ben Adam l'chaveroi, it's rather ben Adam l'makom. And it seems that this is indeed a machlokes harishonim. The Ramban, in his commentary on Chumash, on Parashas Yisro, notes that the first five of the Aseres HaDibros seem to be focused on mitzvahs that are ben Adam l'makom, right? The mitzvah of Amunah, the mitzvah Yisro of Avodah Zarah, not to take a Kadosh Baruch Hu's name in vain in a Shavua, Shabbos, and Kibud Aviyim is the last one in that list. So it seems from the context of where it's found in the Aseres HaDibros that Kibud Aviyim is a mitzvah that's been Adam Lamakon. At the same time, the Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnayos and Masechtas Peah delineates two categories of mitzvahs. There are those that are ben Adam Lamakon, those that are ben Adam Lachaveiro, and as examples of that which is ben Adam Lamakon, the Rambam cites tzitzis, tefillin, Shabbos, Avodah Zarah. But when he's talking about mitzvahs that are ben Adam Lachaveiro, he cites this sort of gneva, oina, right, fraud, theft, sinna, hatred, and the Rambam mentions in that context, that that's also, to honor parents is also a mitzvah that's been Adam, not been Adam Mamakum, but rather been Adam Lechaveiro. So this seems to be a machlokes between the Ramban and the Rambam. It might be related to an issue that often comes up in the context of the extent of Kibud Aviyim, bordering and kind of abusive abuses to the rights of parents, abusive parenting, which is to what degree is a child obligated to listen to instructions of a parent when it has nothing to do with the parental relationship? Meaning, of course, is when it comes to servicing the parent or honoring the taking care of the parent, that's included within the jurisdiction of Kibud Aviyim. But what if it has to do with the parent commands a child to do this or that, but it has nothing to do with the parent? It's the way the child leads his own life. Does the parent have the right to, is that within the purview of Kibud Aviyim? Is that within the jurisdiction of Kibud Aviyim? So the Rashba writes over here, Oysid Af, Bob Mitzil Amara, Aleph Amabez, that no, that's not included within the limitations of Kibud Aviyim. If the parent asks the child to do something that has nothing to do with caring for the parent, taking care of the parent, parental relationship, that's not included in Kibud Aviyim. And this is cited by the Rama in the name of the Ma'arik, with regards to a common scenario of a parent who objects to the choice that the child makes in terms of a spouse. He's upset that the son is marrying a certain woman. That the son desires to marry. He doesn't have to listen to the father. And Rick explains, because this has nothing to do with the parental relationship. I always add that that's assuming that the parents aren't supporting the couple, right? Now, all of a sudden, the father is back in the picture, or, they're not living in their house, or whatever it is. But if they are, then of course, the father is a party to what's going on. But, a healthier relationship is that the father should understand that this is the son choosing his own life, or the daughter choosing his own life, and let them lead their life as they so choose, even if they feel that it's, that it might be detrimental. They can make their voices heard, but the ultimate decision lies with the child. And that's not necessarily included within the purview of Kibud Aviyim. Might be the parent probably, a little bit wiser, a little bit more experienced, might actually be right. Once in a while, parents are right? So it might be right, and it might be wise for the child to listen to his parents, but ultimately, the child has the latitude to make that decision for himself. However, even though that's the psak that's quoted by the Rambam, the name of the Ma'arik, there is a tshuva from Rabbi Akiva Eger, and it's a similar thing as found in the Sefer HaMakna Masechtas Kiddushin, that even if it doesn't directly affect the parent, if the parent asks the child to do something, they are obligated to listen. And it's no different than the Iser, or the obligation to honor one's parent and to fear one's parent, which precludes a person from contradicting a parent. The Gemara says, what's an example of Yira? Is you don't contradict the parent. Even if the parent is wrong, you might, might want to gently point them in the right direction, but you're not allowed to outright contradict them. That's a violation of Ishimo Vaviv Tiro. And if you deny or you reject a direct instruction from a parent, that's like contradicting them. That's like contradicting them. So they assume that you're obligated to listen to a parent, even if it doesn't directly affect the parental relationship. Now, it could be that that's only if you contradict them. What if I don't contradict them? I just do it anyway. I say, yes, yes, and then behind their back, I do whatever I want. So then, those that argue, you're right. In that situation, you wouldn't violate Sefer HaMakni, you wouldn't violate Rabbi Akiva Eger, and you'd be in line with the Psak of the Rajman and the Marik. So, yeah, there's ways of negotiating it, but Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Sefer HaMakni seem to assume, at least in theory, that there are instances where Kibbutz Avim could extend even beyond the direct relationship between a parent and a child, meaning the things that affect their relationship, and one would be obligated to listen to a parent even outside of that, the direct confines of that relationship. So it seems to me that this issue is related to this fundamental core issue as to how you define the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim, or what regulates Kibbutz Avim. If it's a kind of hakaras hatov, a ben adam l'chaveiro, so it makes sense to say that it's limited to the confines of their relationship. You know, the things that we have to do with one another. I'm obligated to respect you and to honor you and to, you know, in recognition of all that you did for me. If it has nothing to do with our relationship, you know, then that's really not the context where that gratitude should be found. If, though, Kibbutz Avim is more related to a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, between my relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, one could then begin to understand that perhaps the boundaries of Kibbutz Avim go beyond the parental relationship and even extend to things that are outside of that specific context. In general, one would be obligated to listen to his parent, like he's obligated to listen to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So maybe, you know, then one could understand the broader view of Kibbutz Avim. The truth of the matter is, and this is the point that Rav Schechter makes in Eretz HaTzvi, and many others, the Meshech Chachma is a similar thing in Parshas Kedoshim, it seems that in fact there are two elements to Kibbutz Avim. Both themes exist within Kibbutz Avim. It is that the one, you know, on the one hand, the Bein Adam L'Chaveroi, where one expresses gratitude and recognizes all, you know, the HaKavras HaTov, all that the person's parent did for them throughout their life, and you recognize that by honoring them and by taking care of them to a certain degree. And then there's also an element that's Bein Adam L'Mokoyim, that's Shoshe Shutvi Yesh B'Adam, and by honoring a person's parent, by extension, by proxy, he's honoring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Perhaps this is indicated by the fact that Kibbutz Avim is the last. It is in the right column of the Aseres HaDibros, right, in the first group of the first five, which are primarily Ben Adam L'Mokoyim, but it is the last of the first five. And perhaps that's not, right, nothing is coincidental, but it, you know, comes to indicate that it really sits on the border, right, on the fence between that which is Ben Adam L'Mokoyim and that which is Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Perhaps it includes elements of both. This is indicated as well by Gemara Masechtas Kiddushin, which tells us what seem to be conflicting things. The Gemara says, on the one hand, that ha'av shemochel kvoda kvoda mochel. Right? If a father is mochel on his kavod, he forgives the son, you know, from his obligations. So then kvoda mochel, then you know, the son is not obligated to honor the father any longer if he waives the obligation. That seems to imply that it's bein adam l'chaveroi. You can only waive things that are in your hands that depend on you. And over here, if the father can waive Kibbutz Avim, that seems to imply that it's bein adam l'chaveroi, not bein adam l'makom. It's an interpersonal mitzvah. However, the Gemara tells us earlier in Masechtas Kiddushin that the obligation of Kibbutz Avim extends even after the father is no longer here, even achar me'ev esrim. The Gemara says, mechabdoi b'chayv, mechabdoi b'moisei. How do you honor the father after he's no longer here? By, you know, saying Kaddish, or by referring to him as Hareini Kavaras Mishkavoi, and not sitting in his seat. There are certain things that, you know, obligations of Kavod, that extend, perhaps, even after the father is no longer here. How can you have an obligation to the father after he's no longer here? Bein Adam L'Chaveroi cease when a person passes away. There's no Bein Adam L'Chaveroi to a person, you know, after a person passes away. Bein Adam L'Chaveroi's obligations, you know, interpersonal, and should only continue as long as a person is alive after he passes away. How can you speak about a mitzvah that's Bein Adam L'Chaveroi? So it seems from here that it's really Bein Adam L'Makom, that the obligation of Kibbutz Avim is because by extension, by honoring a parent, by extension, one is really honoring the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it sounds like there's elements to both within Kibbutz Avim. So getting back, perhaps the Rambam therefore felt that a father who's a Rasha doesn't enjoy both obligations of Kibbutz Avim, only one. See, if he's Eino Oysa Maisa Amcha, so then how can you say, he doesn't keep the Torah in the Mitzvahs, how can you say that by honoring him, by extension, that's Kibbutz honoring the Ribbono Shel Olam? The father himself disrespects the Ribbono Shel Olam. He doesn't keep the Torah in the Mitzvahs. So maybe the Rambam feels that the only obligation that exists with regards to a father who's a Rasha, is the key, you know, is the Hakaras HaTov. The father might not, he might be worshipping Avodah Zarah, but he might have been a good parent who took care of the child his whole life. In which case, the obligation of Kibbutz Avim continue not with the Bein Adam L'Mokoyim component, but at least with the Bein Adam L'Chaveroi component. Therefore, the Rambam feels, Abba Vuzo Rasha, there is still an obligation of Kivat Aviyim, not, you know, because by extension, by proxy, but because of basic Hakara Satay, recognition of all the good that a parent did for the child. But that would only be, right, that's the father's of Rasha splits this duality that exists within Kibbutz Aviyim. But perhaps it's only while the father is alive, right? While the father is alive, you can speak about a mitzvah that's Ben Adam L'Chaveroi. After the father passes away, if he's a father who's a Rasha, so Ben Adam L'Chaveroi component ceases to function because there is no Ben Adam L'Chaveroi after a person passes away. It's only while he's alive. The only thing that continues on after that is the Ben Adam L'Mokom component, but that doesn't exist by a father who's a Rasha because he's Eino Eisa Maisa Amcha. He broke his relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. He broke that partnership. And perhaps therefore the Rambam distinguishes between when the father is alive and the father is dead. When he's alive, if a father is a Rasha, it doesn't keep the Torah of the Mitzvah. It will still be an obligation of Kibbutz Aviyim. If the father passes away, there would be no obligation of Kibbutz Aviyim because he only enjoys one component of the Mitzvah of Kibbutz Aviyim, that which is Bein Adam L'Chaveroi. I believe the Rambam goes L'Shitasai in distinguishing between these two elements, these two themes, these two tracks within Kibbutz Aviyim, with regards to Bnei Noach or a Ger. The Rambam writes over here, in Hilchas Mamon, Perek Hei Alochi Yud Aleph, Hager, a person who converts. Now, after a person converts, the Gemara is a rule that a Gershon is Gair, Kekotin Shanoi Ladami. When a person converts, he severs his relationship, halachically, with his previous family. He's like a newborn child. So halachically, he's no longer considered to be related to them. Even if they convert too, by the way. Even if the parents convert too, there's no, they aren't technically, halachically related. Nonetheless, the Rambam writes, Hager, even though Gershon is Gakatan Shanai Ladam, he's like a newborn baby. Also the Kalal Aviv Ha'akum La'Kaisai. If his father, even if the father didn't convert, the father remained a goy, he's still prohibited from cursing him and hitting him. V'loi Vazu Zehu, and he's not allowed to embarrass him. Kidei Shelo Yoimu Bo Mikedusha Chamur L'Kedusha Kalsha. No one should say that he came from an area of more mitzvahs to an area of less mitzvahs. Now here the Rambam is citing a Gemara Maseches Yevamos, which tells us that even though a Gershon is Gair Kachatan Shanai Ladami, when a Ger converts, he's no longer, you know, he severed his relationship halachically with his previous relatives, he's not allowed to marry his sister. Why? They're not related anymore. The answer is because when he was a guy, he wasn't allowed to marry his sister. One of the Shevet Misses B'nai Noach is Gili Arayas. So when he converts, it can't be that he got a heter by converting. He has less mitzvahs now that he converted than he had when he was a guy. That would mean that people will say, Abo mi kedusha chamura, you came from the intense religious experience of being a Gentile to now the watered down religious experience of being a Jew. Abo mi kedusha chamura, kedusha kao, now you can marry your sister? Can't be. So Chazal said, midrabanan, you can't marry certain kraven. So Rem applies that here too. That you should, no one should say you came from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala, and therefore even after he converts, he still is not allowed to curse and to hit his parents, and the Rambam writes, he's chayev b'miksas kavod. He's chayev to honor them partially. We'll have to explain what that partially means. So Ramesha infers from the Rambam, sounds like from here, that a person is obligated to honor his parent when he's a goy. Because if he wouldn't be obligated to honor his parent when he was a Gentile, why would one think that when he converts, if he's not obligated to honor them, or he can curse them and hit them, that bomi kedusha chamura, kedusha kala. He came from a place of many mitzvahs to a place of less mitzvahs. How does that apply? It applies to Arias. Arias is one of the Shev mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. But how does that apply to Kibbutz Aviyim? It sounds like from the Rambam that Kibbutz Aviyim applies to Bnei Noach. It applies to Gentiles too. And therefore, even when a person converts and he's no longer related to his parents, who are Gentiles, he would still be obligated to honor them, no different than when he was a guy. So Ramesha writes in the Gemara, it sounds like from here that a goy, and certainly when a person converts to, is still obligated in some kind of basic Kibbutz Aviyim. Where did the Rambam get this from? So Reb Chaim Kanievsky is a sefer called Derech HaMelech. And the Rambam, he writes that the Rambam got this from that Medrash by Terach, that Avram Avinu, who was kind of like the first Ger, right? He was the first Jew, so to speak. It's a big tumult, and it's a big discussion. What were the Avos Kodem out the Torah? And that's well beyond our discussion right now. What was their status? Were they Jews? Were they non-Jews? Were they Bnei Noach? Whatever it is. Reb Chaim Kanievsky suggests that the Rambam, that Avram Avinu was the first Ger. His father, therefore, was no longer related to him once he decided to join, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam in his pilgrimage to Eretz Yisrael, and that's why he was exempt from Kibbutz Aviyim. But nonetheless, there is still some element of Kibbutz Aviyim that remains, that even a Ger is still obligated in Kibbutz Aviyim. Like the Rambam said, even a goy was obligated in Kibbutz Aviyim. So after he converts, it's not, you know, the same Kibbutz Aviyim, they're no longer related, but there is some element of Kibbutz Aviyim that continues to exist. And that's why the Torah concealed Avram Avinu's, you know, kind of the abandoning of his father, or, you know, didn't highlight it, in order to not hire the fact that he seems to have at least been shirking this responsibility of kibud avim that exists for every ger after he converts. He wasn't shirking his responsibility. He was doing the mitzvah of Hashem, who told him to go to Eretz Yisrael, but every other person in such a similar situation would be obligated to kibud avim in order to highlight the fact that Avraham Avinu abandoned his father. The Torah concealed it, you know, within the ordering of the psukim. But what obligation of kibud avim exists by b'nei noach? It's not one of the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach. And in what way is a ger obligated to honor his parent after he converts? He's no longer related to them. So it seems, and the point is made even worse when you consider the Gemara Masechtas Kiddushin, Alam Adalef Amad Alef. The Gemara there, of course, tells the famous story of Dama ben Nesina, who was ben Noach, who honored his father to an extraordinary degree. The father had a precious stone that the Chazal needed for the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. They were willing to pay an enormous, handsome sum for the stone, but the key to the safe was lying under the head of his father while the father was sleeping, and he refused to wake up his father in order to retrieve the stone, which he could sell for an enormous sum. So you see, to the extent that he was willing to sacrifice for kibud avim, and the Gemara says, as a result of that, a reward for that, he was able to have the next year paraduma, which they then purchased for even more money from him. So the Gemara concludes with the statement that if he was rewarded so much for kibud avim, and he's a ben noach who was not obligated in kibud avim, how much more so, gadol mitzvah v'yayis, mishanein mitzvah v'yayis, how much more so do kol yisrael who are commanded in kibud avim, will they receive reward if they do it? Because you receive more reward if you're commanded than if you volunteer to do a mitzvah, even though it's counterintuitive. You receive more reward for volunteering to do a mitzvah than you do for, more reward for doing a mitzvah you're obligated to do than reward for volunteering a mitzvah. So if Dov ben Asina received this reward, how much more so kol yisrael who does it when they're obligated to do it? So the Gemara says almost explicitly, Dov ben Asina was not obligated in kibud avim. There is no kibud avim by b'nei noach. So how can the Rambam imply that a ger is obligated to honor his parents after he converts? So no one should say, well, when you were a guy, you were obligated to honor your parents. Now that you converted, not obligated to honor your parents. And he continues to have to honor his parents, b'mikzas covered. How can it be? But a ben noach was not obligated to kibud avim, as we see from the Gemara by Dov ben Asina. So perhaps the answer is that we have to distinguish between the two parts of kibud avim. The kibud avim of being a partner with the Ribbono Shel Olam in the creation of a person, and by honoring a parent, by proxy honoring the Ribbono Shel Olam too, that doesn't exist by a guy, that doesn't exist by a ger, once that relationship is severed because of ger shenis gair kekatan shenoy ladami. That's, more biological, or halachically, right? Based on biology, but the halacha is the definition of biology, that this is your biological parent. However, and therefore when a person converts, and, api halacha, the biological relationship has been severed, there's no obligation of kibud avim, that's bein adam lamakon. However, there's another part of kibud avim, that's pashat hakaras hatoiv, that you have to have recognition for someone who did so much for you. And that exists, says Rav Moshe, even if the person is a goy, that they're not obligated in a formal kibud avim as we know it, but there is that element of hakaras hatoiv that, of course, extends to b'nei noach too. And therefore, even after a person converts, and halachically, he's no longer considered to be related to his parent, because gerushin is gar katan shenoy ladami, but the obligation of hakaras hatoiv remains. You don't have to be related to a person, even if a person, fosters a child, adopts a child, and they take care of the child, a step-parent. Nonetheless, there are obligations of kibud avim, if not the kibud avim that's ben adam lamakom, but the kibud avim, potentially, right, if they have a good relationship, that's ben adam l'chaver, of how much the parent invested in this child and did for this child, and that continues, to exist even after a person converts and he's no longer halachically related to them, goes above and beyond the relationship that exists. And the obligation is ben adam lamakom, this is, the component that's ben adam l'chaveron. Perhaps that's exactly what the Rambam means when the Rambam says, noy boi mixas covered, partial covered. Why partial covered? Because there's only one component here of kibud avim. What part of kibud avim exists when the ger converts? The part that's ben adam l'malkoim. The part that's ben adam l'chaveron. Not the part that's ben adam l'malkoim. And therefore, it's noy boi mixas covered. What about the Gemara? The Gemara said, Dama ben Asina was putter in kibud avim, right? He volunteered to do it. How much more so Klal Yisrael, who's obligated in kibud avim, will they receive reward? So the answer, I think, there is, Dama ben Asina went above and beyond the hakaras hatoiv aspect of kibud avim. Why? Because if you would, hakaras hatoiv that the child has for the father, would be guiding kibud avim, well, then you would for sure wake up the parents so they could get a windfall profit by selling this stone. And everyone asks, wouldn't the father have wanted him to wake him up to get this, to make this great sale? The answer is yes. If kibud aviyem is only regulated by hakaras hatoiv and ben adam chavero, then if the father would have wanted you to wake him up, you should probably wake him up. But Dov ben Asina went above and beyond that. Dov ben Asina started practicing kibud aviyem well beyond the hakaras hatoiv aspect of it, but a kind of ben adam lamakoyim aspect of it. He did beyond what the father would have wanted, because he understood that honoring the parent is kilu honoring hakadosh baruch hu. So he did something that was, you know, probably beyond the wishes of the parent. And that kind, that brand of kibud aviyem is what the Gemara says, that b'nei noach are not obligated in that kind of kibud aviyem. That's well above and beyond. How much more so Klal Yisrael, who is obligated in that brand of kibud aviyem, will they receive reward if they practice it? So getting back to the Aviv, who's a Rasha, as we distinguish, he seems to have one component of kibud aviyem, one part of it. And that is the part that's b'nei adam l'chavero. The part that's b'nei adam l'makom, he forfeits when he's eino oisa maisa amcha. But the part that is ben al makom would continue to exist. So therefore, writes of Sternbach and the Chuvis van Huggis, even those who follow the Ramah, right, and passing like the Tour, that there is no obligation of kibud aviyem by father who's a Rasha, there is still a kind of basic kibud aviyem of hakaras hatoiv that perhaps continues to exist. And even if, you know, today, of course, it's hard to label anyone a Rasha for failing to keep the Torah and the mitzvahs. We have so many people who never received a proper education. We label them in other areas of Allah as a tinok shenishba, a baby, you know, who was captured in youth and never received a proper Jewish education, and therefore they're not liable for many of their, you know, they're just ignorant from many of the Torah and the mitzvahs. And certainly here, then, you know, one could conceivably not label a parent who's not Shem Torah and mitzvahs as a father who's a Rasha, just because he doesn't keep the Torah and the mitzvahs. But even if one would have a genuine parent, you know, who could be categorized legitimately as a Rasha for failing to keep the Torah and the mitzvahs, as long as he had a good relationship with his child, there's a positive, that kind of relationship. There's that, of course, element of a karas hatoiv that continues to exist. So therefore, writes of Shermak, the Shuvitz van Hoge, said even a father's a Rasha, even according to the Torah, it might still be an element of a karas hatoiv, of gratitude that should exist, and one would be perhaps obligated to honor them to that degree, to that extent, that kind of mixas kovin. What if, though, the parent does not have a positive relationship with the child? He's an abusive parent. Which, of course, you know, is wrong in an avera. Certainly sexual abuse, physical abuse, even emotional abuse, is a kind of onos dvarim, which is certainly prohibited. So all of these kinds of abuse, the entire spectrum of abuse, would certainly label the parent as a parent who's a Rasha. Is there an obligation of kibud aviyem, you know, there for that kind of a parent? So everyone cites the Gemara Masechtas Kiddushin over here, Oisid Zayin. But the Gemara tells us another story of Daman ben Nesina that's cited by Reb Dimi, that he was once, you know, the tremendous extent of the kibud aviyem of Daman ben Nesina, that he was once sitting amongst a group of dignitaries of royalty, and his mother came, tore his clothing, and spit in his face. V'loy hechlima, he didn't embarrass her, he didn't respond. So don't you see that the child is even obligated to, you know, suffer, you know, kind of mild, abuse at the hands of the parent and not allowed to respond? So the answer is no, because Tosfos there writes, Yesh b'medrash shehaisa meturefes midaita. Oh, it says in the Medrash that she was unwell. She was mentally ill. Maybe it was dementia, maybe she suffered from mental illness her whole life. Whatever it is, the mother wasn't well. Ah, so it wasn't she was mean-spirited. She wasn't well. And when one is discussing, Ramesh actually writes in the Dibur Shmeisha, maybe Daman ben Nesina's whole family was riddled with mental illness. Maybe that's why he didn't wake up his father. Who wouldn't want to be woken up to make such a great sale of selling one of the stones for the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol and earn so much money? It must be the father wasn't well either, and Daman ben Nesina therefore didn't wake him up. So maybe mental illness ran in the family, but that's Ramesh writes. But certainly if the parent is not, not evil, mean-spirited, but not well, that's an entirely different discussion. The Gemara has Maseches Kiddushin Lamed Aleph Amud Beis in the story with Rav Asi and his mother. The Rav Asi Havalei Ima Zekena. He had an older mother who was suffering from dementia, and she said, "I need jewelry," and he made her jewelry. He said she needed a man to get married. He got her a man to get married, and then she, "No, I want a husband like you," meaning she was propositioning her own son, which of course was inappropriate. So at that point, Rav Asi said, "You know what? I can't be here anymore." Shav Kavi Azo La'aradi Yisrael. He left her, and he went to Eretz Yisrael. So the Rambam derives from this Gemara, and it's an important sugya in its own right, that if one is dealing with a parent who's nitra fadaito, the dementia, or suffering from any kind of mental illness, you should do what you can to take care of the parent, like Rav Asi, but at some point, if you can't handle it anymore, it became too severe, he should delegate that responsibility to someone else who can then take care of them, meaning hand it off to someone else. Kravasi, who went to Eretz Yisrael. The Raiva disagrees with the Rambam, and he says, I don't understand. If you can't handle them, why do you think anybody else can handle this parent who's suffering from this illness or this dementia? Who's going to then take care of the parent? That's the argument of the Raiva. However, there are many circumstances where a lot of times, you know, the tension that's created as a result of mental illness or dementia is triggered by the relationship that the child has with the parent. Right? Many times, you know, the mental illness is made worse by this relationship with the parent and the child. Sometimes it can become a toxic relationship. Certainly, there are some activities that a person would have to take care of for a parent who has dementia that is uncomfortable for a child to perform. It would be better, you know, with a third party. So all of these things do figure into these kinds of calculations, and that leads the Shulchan Giborim over here in the Piskei Riyaz to tell us that if one has a parent who has deos ros, who has bad midos, or is, you know, suffering from some kind of, you know, mental illness, they're causing him tremendous tsar, so then he should leave the parent. He should delegate that responsibility to other, because it's not a positive relationship. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that, of course, when one is dealing with a parent who's in these kinds of situations, predicaments, and he says over here, if the yadua shemishtagim b'yoyser, if they, you know, became so severe, the illness, be'achreach la'asim b'zikim u'chavolim, sometimes you have to restrain the parent, and certainly the son isn't going to want to be the one to do that. And then the Aruch HaShulchan goes on, which I thought was fascinating, and he says, if a parent is suffering from midos roz, or he's an addict, v'cheinim hayashikar, so it's better that the child distance himself from that relationship. It's also a kind of an illness, sickness, and therefore the child shouldn't be around for that. It's the parent's not mean spirited. It's just there's a toxicity here to the relationship, and it would be better handled by a third party, by professionals who know how to handle these kinds of situations. The Sefer Chassidim has a fantastic gematria. We know it's on the pasuk Hinei Matovim Manoim Shevas Achim Gam Yachad. That it's so great when brothers are able to live together. So he writes, Achim Gam is Gematria Banim. Achim Gam is Gematria Banim. Because it also refers to parents and children who are able to live in proximity to each other. That's fantastic. And they're able to share their lives together. Hinei Matovim Anoim Sheves Achim Gam Yachad, when parents and children are able to live together. But, says the Sefer Chassidim, sometimes these relationships become toxic. But if they're always fighting with each other, even if there isn't any mental illness, it's just a toxic relationship, better that the child, you know, avoid that relationship and leave the parents, you know, in the hands of someone perhaps who's more capable, who won't have those same triggers and that same toxicity. What if the parent, though, you know, there is no mental illness necessarily, even though I think, I don't have that much clinical experience certainly, and even anecdotal experience is limited. But if the abusive, you know, tendency is related to mental illness, but certainly even if it's not related to mental illness, what is a child, you know, supposed to do? So we said that, you know, if there's a mental illness component, he can do the best he can, and then, you know, at that point, just leave the parent. But what if it is mean-spirited, you know, it isn't in the best interest of the child? So then, the Yamsha Shlomo writes over here, Oisid Zayin, if it's Meiroya Halev, it's not because of Miturefes, it's not because of an illness. There is at least perhaps a component that, I don't know, more than selfish, but, you know, just not really interested in the best interest of the child. That's not the top priority. So then the Yamsha Shlomo writes, there'd be no obligation of Kibbut Aviyem at all. Perhaps even to the best of your ability, you're not obligated to endure that that far. Why? Why not? So there's a beautiful article about this, about the honoring the abusive parent by Dr. Ben-Zion Sirotskin, which is available online. He has it on his website, fantastic. And he quotes there from Rav David Cohn, one is not obligated to endure any kind of abuse in the parental relationship because we have a general rule when it comes to mitzvahs. You have to spend money on a mitzvah, but only up to a fifth of that which you have. Right? General rule with how much you have to spend on mitzvahs. So Rav Moshe writes the Tshuva in the Igros Moshe. Rav Moshe there is discussing if you have a person who's in an institution, an asylum, a hospital, and they're going through treatment and therapy, but they're not going to be able to have Megillah or Shofar or Matzah. So is one obligated to remove them from the treatment that they're going through in order to enable them to hear Shofar, to hear Megillah, to eat Matzah, but you're going to set back their therapy, their treatment. So Moshe writes, no, you're not obligated to do that because you're only obligated to spend up to a fifth of that which you have, at a chaimish, in order to fulfill any mitzvah, and what person's mental well-being is worth well more than a fifth. Of course that's worth more than a fifth. So too over here, Rav David Cohen applies that same sock to this situation. Here too, keep it aviyim, one is only obligated to spend up to a fifth of that which he has. Certainly a person's mental stability and well-being, sometimes, you know, the abusive relationship can lead to suicide, right? Of course, that's pikuach nefesh mamish. But even if we're not holding by that, you're not obligated to endure, you know, to sacrifice your own mental well-being in order to fulfill the mitzvah of kibud aviyim. Moreover, Rav David Cohen explains that the mitzvah of kibud aviyim, the Gemara has a shaila debate, who's obligated to pay for kibud aviyim? Who's obligated to pay for taking care of the parent? So we paskin, as a machlok, the Gemara is a mishal ben or mishal av, we paskin as mishal av. The father is the one who has to pay for the kibud aviyim, the parent. Over here, the pain, right, the payment is the suffering that the child has to endure in this relationship. He's not obligated to endure, he's not obligated to pay anything necessarily for kibud aviyim. That has to come mishal av. And if you ask him to endure suffering to do kibud aviyim, then that will be asking him to do, to sacrifice from himself. He's not obligated to do that for kibud aviyim. Kibud aviyim is mishal av and not mishal ben. A lot of times, even if, the relationship has been severed and, people have avoided these kinds of toxic relationships, it comes back at the end of a person's life, when the parent passes away. And many times, children who suffer this kind of abusive relationships, don't want to sit avelos for a parent. So, the obligation to sit avelos for 12 months and to say Kaddish, that's unique to a parent. And therefore, writes the Shach over here in Yoredeya, Simen Shin Dalet Mem, Sifkan Tes, those obligations flow from Kibud Aviyim. Yud Beis Kaddish saying Kaddish, the reason why a child has to observe those practices for a parent is because of Kibud Aviyim. And therefore, if there was no obligation of Kibud Aviyim for this parent, maybe they were Rasha, maybe they had an abusive relationship, they had no Hakar, right? Rasha already forfeits the Oysa Maisa Amcha, the Ben Adam Omakum component of Kibud Aviyim, and maybe this child has no Hakar Satoy for this parent, because they suffered more than they gained in this relationship. So maybe it would have neither component of Kibud Aviyim, maybe the child wouldn't be obligated to observe Yud Beis Chodesh or to say Kaddish. What about Shiva and Shloshim? Now, Shiva and Shloshim apply to all relatives across the board. So that doesn't seem to be related to Kibud Aviyim. So therefore, the Rambam writes, if a father forgoes, he's meichel on Shiva Shloshim, nonetheless, the child has to continue to observe Shiva and Shloshim. That's not because of the covet of the Mason, that's because of the covet of the Chayim, whatever it is, the sanctity of life, and to help the Avelim through this difficult stage in their life. So that's not doesn't flow necessarily from Bein Adam, from Kibud Aviyim. Nonetheless, Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes that the Rambam perhaps disagrees, and perhaps according to the Rambam, even Shiva and Shloshim is not about covet of Chayim, honoring the Avelim who are here, and the sanctity of life, but it's more about covet Amesim, to honor the Mace after he's no longer here. So it's covet Amesim. And even though there is no, covet that's necessarily due for all Shiva Kravim who want to observe Avelos, for the obligation to observe Avelos generally, even Shiva and Shloshim, is a covet to the Mace, like a covet Achron, a kind of Hakaras HaToiv, kind of that it fits within that category of mitzvahs. So if that's the case, the Shev Yaakov paskins that perhaps the father could be meichel on Shiva and Shloshim, and perhaps over here where the mitzvah of Kibud Aviyim would not extend to an abusive parent who was a Rasha and who the child has no gratitude towards, maybe even they could forego Shiva and Shloshim too. However, Shiva and Shloshim are a little bit more complicated than, Yud Beis Chodesh and Kaddish, which clearly flow from the obligations of Kibud Aviyim. I think it is important to throw in the one caveat that, it doesn't seem like the Kibud Aviyim applies, of course, to any kind of abusive behavior, and that would include the entire spectrum of abuse. I think we do need to draw a distinction between, bad parenting, and every parent makes mistakes, and abusive parenting. And I'm not trying to condone in any way lighten, mild abuse as just bad parenting. No, abusive parenting is one thing, and every parent making a mistake is another thing. But I do think we need to kind of draw that distinction. And not every parent who makes a mistake is abusive. And again, I don't mean to make light of any kind of abuse by labeling it just as bad parenting or writing it off. Every parent makes mistakes. No, of course that's not true. But that distinction does I think need to be made. And I think there is a balance that has to exist within Kibud Aviyim. Of course, Kibud Aviyim is an obligation the children have to the parents. But the Rambam makes the important point in Perek Vav Hilchos Ma'amar Malacha Ches and Tes that Af Al Pi Shebekach Nistavinu, even though there is an obligation of Kibud Aviyim, also the Adam LaHachbid Oylai Al Banav, he's not allowed to be overly oppressive on his children, L'Daktik B'Kvayda Imahim, and to be overly, to become a burden on the children. Kibud Aviyim exists, but there's a dynamic here that each one has responsibilities to the other, and the parents have to make sure that they don't, overly burden the children. The Rambam writes, a person who disciplines an older child by striking them, is clearly out of bounds. And a person who does that, the Gemara says, Ma'ikan is Oivan Lifnaiver Loisite Mechshol. You're prompting the child to respond in a way that's not appropriate, and that's the parent's fault for acting, out of line. As the Gemara says in Gittin, La'olam al-yatil adam eima yaseiru b'soich beiso. A person should never have an attitude of fear in his home. The children should feel loved, they should feel embraced, they should feel comfortable in the home, and that's the parent's obligation to create a home where the children feel fostered and supported and understood, and that's the obligation that the parents have to the child. I think there's a beautiful story that Dr. Sirotkin has there from the Stipler, that the Stipler, when he was getting older, so his daughter was taking care of him. So he said to, the daughter said to him, and he wasn't feeling well, so the daughter said, if the situation worsens throughout the night, wake me up. He was like, they were both going to go to sleep. She was going to go to sleep. He was going to go to sleep. She said to him, if it worsens over the night, wake me up. She woke up in the morning at normal time. He didn't wake her up, so she assumed everything was fine. Then she later learned that, no, his situation had deteriorated overnight, and he really wasn't feeling well throughout the night, but he didn't wake her up. So she came back to him. She said, I told you to wake me up. I have an obligation of Kibud Aviyim. I wanted to tell you, you denied me my obligation of Kibud Aviyim, my mitzvah. So he said, no, he said, it's true, you're obligated to honor me, but I'm obligated, same language, it works well in Hebrew. He said, you're obligated in Kibud Av, I'm obligated not to lahachbid, not to make myself a burden, too much on you. And it's that dynamic that each one is looking out for the other, which is really, the kind of the healthy relationship of Kibud Aviyim that we hope to all achieve and, that we aspire to. All right, Chevra, shkoyach.
Thank you, Rav.